Thinking Liberty, episode 19.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of Thinking Liberty. We're still here in Old Orchard Beach, Maine. And as always, I'm Zach.
And I'm Sarah. And we've just been enjoying the close proximity that we have to the beach. Ollie's definitely been enjoying it. He's definitely a little beach dog. And as a matter of fact, lately, every time it gets to be about 5 or 6 o'clock, he just starts staring at the door and whining like he knows it's time to go to the beach.
Yeah, but it's definitely been nice for us to get out there too, and we share a little bit of his enthusiasm on going to the beach.
Yeah, and it's only been a few days since we last recorded, so we haven't gotten into too much here because we've mostly been working during the day and then just taking advantage of being close to the beach in the evenings. We're definitely hoping to get into Portland, Maine this weekend, so if any of you have been and have any suggestions or recommendations for us, let us know. But I have some work travel coming up, so we've been kind of laying it low a little bit. But just really enjoying the weather and the experience of being here in Old Orchard Beach.
Yeah, it's been really easy here at this RV park because we're able to walk to the beach. There are several restaurants and coffee shops and things like that within walking distance and little shops. So we haven't really been getting out that much just because it's been nice to walk around during the evenings and bring Ollie with us and just be able to pop over there for a little bit and come back.
We did stumble across a local brew that's made in Portland, Maine. It's the Shipyard Brewing Company. They have a brew that is infused with yerba mate and fireball herbal, fireberry. Glad it's not fireball. Fireberry herbal tea. And it's actually pretty good, but I was really interested in it just because of the yerba that's mixed in there. But yeah, that's really it for us.
So for this week's episode, we talked to Astrid Clements of AstridTravel.com, and she's a lifelong traveler and is now really getting into trying to help people learn how to travel solo. And I know she, even within that niche, would specialize in affordable luxury travel, so it was really interesting to hear her take on things and her travel stories. She's been all over the U.S. and all over the world, and as I said, she's been traveling basically since she was a child, and it ramped up even more when she was a teenager and just seemed to never end from there.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cool looking at the luxury travel aspect of it because, you know, there are so many different ways to travel, and really, for the most part, none of them are wrong. You know, if you want to go on a shoestring budget and just try to see as much as possible in, you know, the amount of time that you have and make your finances go far, that's great and exciting. If you want to kind of be middle of the road and maybe splurge on some things, but then skimp on other areas to really maximize your dollar. Or if your goal is to more, you know, maximize the comfort of your experience or, you know, really see the things, you know, don't ignore things or opportunities because they cost a lot of money or they cost some amount of money, but just really take advantage of any and all opportunities. It's not wrong to do that either. You know, it's just about what your interests and hobbies and priorities are when you travel. So, you know, she talks about how she'll put together groups of solo travelers together sometimes to go see the ballet in Russia or, you know, certain types of art in whatever country that it was started. So it's just really interesting to look at a totally new perspective, I think, for our show about travel. And also having the courage and independence to get out there and travel by yourself.
Which is something I don't know that I even have yet. I would definitely enjoy having you around and traveling as a partner rather than by myself, but who knows? I mean, it's a skill I kind of wish I did have.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to travel with people, but sometimes you're just not able to. And she'll touch on the fact, you know, that she is married, but that as she and her husband have gotten older, he's kind of lost some of the interest in traveling. And so it's great that she's still able to get out there and do it. So it was kind of cool to talk about the relationship aspect of it, too, because I know that for a lot of people, it's kind of unheard of to leave your significant other or partner and go travel. So it was great to see a couple putting that into action and really making it work for them, because I feel like, you know, even though you and I do everything together, sometimes, you know, we understand that we do have to travel separately for work or other things, and we just enjoy the moments we have and take it from there.
Yeah. So let's go into the interview with Astrid Clements of AstridTravel.com.
Yeah, before I give everything away.
All right, Astrid, welcome to Thinking Liberty. Thank you so much for joining.
Well, thank you for asking me. I feel very honored that you'd like me to come and share with your listeners some of my ideas and my expertise.
Yeah, definitely. So we already did your introduction in our first segment, and I saw that you've basically been traveling since you were a child, and I guess you kind of ramped it up a little bit more when you were a teenager and been just going at it ever since. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, your life of travel and what you're doing now?
Right. Well, I have been a very, I guess you'd say, blessed person in many ways. And when I first started traveling is, you know, like you said, as a young girl, my father was an entrepreneur, and he had a franchise company, and he did a lot of traveling and putting in different franchises all over the United States. So I got to travel with him, and I remember as a young girl, 9 years old, going to Miami Beach for the first time. And we stayed at the fabulous Fountain Blue Hotel. Frank Sinatra was performing there. I mean, this was just was so glamorous to me. Here, you know, I was 9 years old from Louisiana, and I thought, oh, golly, there are places in the world that are just so different than what I'm used to. And then we also, my sister, I have a younger sister, she, you know, of course we traveled together with our father, and we went out to California, and we got to stay one summer in La Jolla, and that was another just a fabulous young experience where, you know, we saw the gorgeous beaches of California and the beautiful people, and of course Disney World and Hollywood. And I just, from that point on, I just kind of thought, you know, I might be born in Louisiana, but I really like this fancy this fancy life and these different cultures and people, etc. So it kind of started there. And then, you know, when I was in high school, I did a lot of travel in the United States with school trips, etc., going up the East Coast. I love Charleston, Savannah. Washington, D.C. was so interesting. I remember going through all the different Smithsonian museums and thought, oh my gosh, this is my whole education from elementary school to high school, the space and aeronautics and the portrait museum and everything. I just thought it was wonderful that I could actually see a lot of these exhibits that kind of brought home what I had learned in school. And then, of course, New York City, which that completely blew my mind, too. I thought this is the most fabulous city in the world, and I still believe that today. New York City has a special vibe, and it's just such a wonderful city. Then Boston, I thought, was so cool. All the early American history, and just I could just imagine, you know, a lot what's happened with the United States when it first was a very young country. And then my first trip out of the United States was to Quebec and Montreal. And I love that because it had a lot of French influence. And actually, my maiden name is Roy. And the Roys came from Quebec and Montreal. So I just kind of naturally felt an in sync comfort there. So I love that. So that started it. And then once I went to college, I talked my father into letting me go to Europe by myself. And I, you know, went on a work exchange project or program through LSU and Lufthansa, and pursued getting my German fluent. And then I also was lucky, I ended up going to a music conservatory another summer. And when I was there, I traveled all over the areas that were close to where I was, and I just totally fell in love with Europe. But what it did was it threw me back to my very early childhood, which I was a little different in Louisiana because my mother was born in Berlin, Germany. And I had a very strong influence as a very young girl from my German grandparents who didn't speak English, who practiced all kinds of German culture within their home. And they were really, they babysat me a lot, and they were big, big influence on me as a very young child. So I grew up kind of already knowing another culture. And what this first trip to Europe did is it really, it honed in on that, you know, I'm kind of two people. I'm a European and I'm an American. And I want to enjoy both sides of who I am. And that's really kind of what started it. And then from there on, my husband, when I got married, he is an architect, and he did a lot of jobs, even international jobs. And I got to travel with him, and it's just gone on and on. So that's Zach, how I got started. I think it was in my DNA, as well as, you know, I really did enjoy different cultures, different people. And, you know, I came to the conclusion I was born to roam.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So I know you emphasize solo travel a lot. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why you emphasize it and maybe what makes it unique from traveling with a group or with a partner?
Yeah, it kind of evolved for me. You know, in my professional life, I did a lot of travel, business travel, and so I had to do it, you know, solo. And it probably started about 35 years ago, but I had the opportunity really to probably go to every major city in the United States because of business things that I was involved in. So, you know, I had to start developing skills as a solo traveler because, you know, I was traveling a lot solo. Well, I would say probably about 15 to maybe 18 years ago, I noticed there were so many more women traveling solo. And really, probably for the most part, for business purposes, just like me. And I've always been easy to talk to, and people are comfortable talking to me. So I've met a lot of different fellow solo business travelers, females, and they would always ask me, well, what'd you do? And, you know, where'd you go eat? And how do you cope with, you know, this, that, and the other? And I really just always got all these questions. And so I would share, you know, well, this is how I do this, and I never do this, and that kind of thing. And then I had several people say, you know, you ought to write a newsletter. I mean, you're just so You know so much about it. You seem so comfortable. And I really, Zach, I have always been very comfortable. I don't know if it's something that, you know, maybe I'm blessed with, but wherever I've traveled all over the world, even if, you know, I completely don't speak the language, don't really know anything about the culture, I'm still very comfortable. So that kind of started it. And then I had that, what Oprah used to call the aha moment.
Yep.
Well, I had decided that I wanted to go to Russia. And my husband, we're both retired. I've been retired for 12 years, and he's semi-retired, but he doesn't like to travel anymore. And so I really wanted to go to Russia. And I was afraid to go to Russia, basically, and had, you know, decided that, you know, how was I going to make this happen? Well, I did a lot of research, and I found what I felt like was the best Russian travel agency, per se. But they dealt strictly with arranging for diplomatic travel, corporate executive travel, and governmental travel. So, I mean, I knew that they were very reputable, and I felt comfortable with engaging them. So to make a long story short, I contacted them. I told them what I wanted to do. I had a whole to-do list. So I basically created an itinerary of all these different things that I wanted to make sure that I experienced, like a troika ride. I wanted to visit a dacha. I wanted to go to Segev Posad, which is where the Russian Orthodox Church was located. I wanted to go to the Bolshoi Ballet. I mean, all these things. So they said, no problem, we can arrange everything. And I told them I wanted what my biggest concern was is I didn't speak the language, and for my safety. I did not want my safety to be compromised at all. So they said, no problem, we'll pick you up at the airport, you know, we'll be with you at all times. So I had a private guide and a driver for the 10 days I was there. The only time I didn't have them is when I took the overnight, beautiful Red Star train from Moscow to St. Petersburg. But they dropped me off at the station. I had somebody pick me up in St. Petersburg. But that trip was so seamless. And so I felt so protected there and alive, and it was just very, very first class. And I thought, you know, there's so many people that would like to go to places that they're afraid to go to, and they don't realize that they can hire private guides and drivers. And there are many things that they can do that will basically deal with their fears or deal with some of the things that really keep them from going. So I decided I think I'm gonna develop a blog and start just blogging about solo travel and why I do it, because I also got a lot of questions from my married friends. They would say, Astrid, why are you going off all by yourself? You know, your husband doesn't mind, or, you know, what's going on? Or, you know, they were just like, just really basically mortified. And I said, no, I said, you just don't really understand. I said, first, I've done a lot of travel and I'm very comfortable with it. But there, if you develop some skills, you can have a fabulous time traveling solo. So, Zach, from that point on, it led to me developing my website, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor. And now I have my own blog, Solo Travel Talk. I have, you know, I blog all about solo travel. I have two other bloggers that contribute to it. I also do videos, how-to videos, what to wear, what not to do, on a lot of different topics. And I'm in the process of developing a marketplace, which I should launch probably within about 6 weeks, where I will offer products that I think that are very functional and also very nice for travel, and specifically for the solo traveler. And also, I am developing trips, which I will be offering for solo travelers in very small groups. And these trips will typically be based on a particular specialty or topic. Like my first trip, and I did this in conjunction with the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I put together a trip to St. Petersburg because I've been to Russia four times and I have friends there and great contacts. But this trip focused on classical ballet. And what we did was I took a group of 10 art patrons from Baton Rouge, and we had the most marvelous time in St. Petersburg. We went to the palaces. We ate at the best restaurants. We got to go to the Vaganova Ballet School, and we saw where the ballerinas, the ballerinas of Russia train and watch them train. We had dinner with a prima ballerina. We went to the Mariinsky Theater and had a big tour backstage. We had a lecture from a curator from the Hermitage Museum. And it was just a beautiful trip because it was a combination of sightseeing, great food, focused on the marvelous culture of Russia. St. Petersburg is an imperial city, so the architecture is out of this world. And it was really a trip of a lifetime and very affordable. And going back to my website, and my focus, you know, there are a lot of people that blog about backpacking and how to see the world and, you know, do it very, very inexpensive. Well, my niche is focused on affordable luxury. And what I offer is affordable luxury ideas. And I'm working on the products and the services. So that's my goal, basically, with the website, is to be a go-to place for solo travelers who are in this, I'd say, this economic strata. And basically, my readers are the people, I mean, I have what I think very good ideas on just basic solo travel, but specifically the price points, people who travel the way that I typically do are willing to spend somewhere between $500 to $1,000 a day, or somewhere around $5,000 a trip. That's kind of, you know, how my focus on solo travel started. it just evolved out of my passion for travel and being comfortable traveling and loving meeting different people, experiencing different cultures. And I just felt like it was so enriching that I wanted to share it with others to hopefully encourage them to take that step and do it. Because I know a lot of people that would like to do this or go there, but many times they're unrealistic or their imaginary fears stop them from doing it. And so that's kind of how it all evolved. So now I'm just doing this full time. I'm retired, yeah. But this passion has become a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, those are some great points, too, because for you, maybe Russia was scary at first, but for some people, it might be scary to even, you know, leave their hometown and get out and even visit things around them. So it's nice to have somebody who's done it before with all the, you know, knowledge and resources to talk to.
Yeah, Zach, and I do always recommend, you know, when people ask me about, oh, gosh, you know, I don't know if I could do that. And I always tell them, look, if you really want to do it, go somewhere close to where you live. Don't venture off, you know, across the ocean or whatever with your first trip. Take a long weekend. Go somewhere, like if you're from the United States, New Orleans is a great getaway destination for a long weekend. Santa Fe is another wonderful place. Miami Beach, if you like the beach, is great. Denver can be very interesting. I mean, there are a lot of places that you can go that are walkable and have a lot to do that you can kind of just stick your toe out in the water, you know, and get comfortable with being by yourself and enjoying the day and experiencing new things. And, you know, the more you do it, the more you will get comfortable with it. It just takes, like any new skill or anything new that you do, you have to get through some of the initial difficult things, whether it's, you know, you really hate to eat by yourself, or you're scared to death to get in cabs, or whatever, you know, because everybody has certain things that make them feel very uncomfortable. So you have to kind of logically think your way through, now how am I going to mitigate what is making me feel this way? How can I problem solve? And so if you take it a short weekend or maybe even just a day to start, and you keep doing it, I think you'll probably end up being pretty comfortable with going across the pond. But you have to really think about a lot of things and do a lot of research and kind of a plan. Really plan as much as you can, because the more that you kind of conceive it beforehand, it takes away some of the discomfort and, you know, also culture shock. That's a big thing, too, that people don't realize that they go through whenever they go to somewhere new. And it takes a couple of days to really get through that culture shock. But so I do, I have a passion with sharing and teaching and encouraging, and I love life. I love to have fun, and travel is one of the most fun things to do in the whole world.
Yeah, that's really exciting and interesting that you're putting together all these resources for people. I always get excited when people do that and, you know, put together vacation packages or trip packages for people, because so oftentimes I hear people talking how they want to travel more. They just don't know where they would go or how to get started or where to begin doing the research. So anytime there's resources for them, it makes it a lot easier to get out there and do it, especially because, you know, our culture is so work focused that a lot of times people don't think they have the time to plan a vacation on top of their work life and their family life and all of these things. So I'm really excited to follow along and watch your website grow and develop with that.
Right. My concept with the trip, Sarah, was, you know, I wanted like-minded women who want to, you know, see the world, say a lawyer, a female lawyer in China, or a doctor in India, and say a business owner in South America. All of them love English gardens or something about gardening. And I envision doing these specialty tours, and say like a tour of the gardens of Southern England, and have, say, you know, I don't want my tours to ever be more than 10 people, because actually the smaller the group, the better. I mean, there's a minimum of 4, but when you get too many people, it's more difficult to get a symbiosis. But just the thought of bringing, you know, like-minded people who don't know each other from different cultures to experience a trip that is focused on something that they are already interested in. I just think it's a wonderful opportunity for, you know, people to definitely take an enjoyable vacation, but also to understand each other all over the world more. And really at the bottom of a lot of what I'm doing is, I know this sounds very idealistic, but, you know, love, peace, and prosperity for all in the world is very important to me. And I think that when you get to know people from different cultures, especially cultures that you don't understand or maybe you even fear, you realize that there's nothing there to fear. And as we do get to know each other better and travel and make friends, I think the world, it's a good thing to help the world be happier. So, you know, I think travel is one of the best vehicles in order to foster good world relations. So that's a little bit at the very bottom of why I'm doing this, because I think everybody needs to kind of love each other more. And one of the ways you start loving somebody that you don't know is to get to know them.
Yeah, it's a great way to make lifelong connections too. So,
oh, and I've made so many. That's another thing. When you travel solo, you know, you're not with friends or you're not with your family, so you're by yourself, and you end up drawing a lot of interesting people to you, especially if you have some confidence about yourself. And you'll be surprised. I've met so many interesting people that are great friends of mine that I stay in contact either Facebook or through texting or emailing. And, you know, it's really enriched my life.
So tell us a little bit about maybe your profession before you started your travel. I don't want to call it an agency, but I guess your travel consultancy. So what allowed you to travel before you were doing all this?
Well, you know, at an early age, well, in my college education, I have a business, a minor in business. I actually wanted to, well, I wanted to have a business degree in real estate, but halfway through it, and, you know, I'm a lot older than you. I went to, I started college in 1967 or 68, and there were very few women in the business school. In fact, I was one of, I think, like four or five, and the other women really just wanted to be executive assistants. They didn't want to own their own business, and I always wanted to own my own business, and I, for some reason, was intrigued with real estate. So I started out on that path, and I also was getting a minor in German because, you know, I grew up in this bifurcated family with my German mother and grandparents. So I really wanted to get my German fluent, etc. Well, halfway through the program, I just felt like that, you know, I was a little bit before the time of women in business. And so I ended up majoring in music, and I decided that I wanted to be an opera singer, which I've always been a singer. I was tagged as a young girl as having a pretty voice. So that kind of got me started, you know, going in another direction. Well, I studied with an opera singer in that summer in Salzburg at the music festival, and I got to see the real underbelly of the music industry in the opera world. And I decided that, you know, maybe this wasn't the exact fit. So to make a long story short, I came home and started working on a master's degree in music history. I thought I'd be a professor or whatever. And my father took me to lunch one day and said, "Look, Astrid, I've never told you what to do, but I don't think that, you know, you'll be totally satisfied as a music professor, even though it's a wonderful profession." He said, you know, you ought to really think about real estate. So here I ended up, you know, getting into real estate, or actually kind of did it part-time to see if I liked it. And it was just a natural for me. So before you know it, I had somebody come to me, a builder, said, I want you to be the broker for this company I want to form, and I'll build all the houses. Well, I did that, and then I bought him out, and I started building houses. So I started in real estate, okay? And that was a wonderful vehicle for me, because it allowed me to establish a foundation of really building some wealth, okay? So with this artistic background that I had, and I've always been involved in so many things in our community, I was lucky I had a very prominent father, so I knew a lot of people. And that led me to do all kinds of different things. And I got involved with stocks and bonds, and I was put on a bonding authority. And I would travel just with different business-oriented things, okay? So that was my first life. But during this time also, I decided I wanted to get a master's degree in international relations, because I really wanted an international business. So I went back to school and got this master's degree. And of course, I focused on East Germany and Eastern Europe. And I did that. And I ended up getting jobs for my husband's architectural firm before the wall came down, which some of it really didn't pan out because of the politics and the international and the currency and everything. But I've always just kind of been thrown into a business world, and it's made me have to travel, and I've met a lot of friends and business contacts that way. So through my professional career, I had a lot of ups and downs, and in the end, I was very blessed. After struggling and kind of fighting a lot, and it turned out to be very, very special and lucrative for me. So that allowed me to basically retire in 2005. And so that's really, you know, it's, I guess you would say my professional life was in real estate and in investments.
So it sounds like, listening to your stories and your experiences, that you really have, you know, a lot of self-discipline and a lot of vision and, you know, some forward thinking. So would you say that there are certain personal habits that you have or that you've developed over time that you've applied for making travel easier or making it so that you have the time to focus more on travel?
Yes. Okay. There's certain things like, one of the things that I do is, first and foremost, I always do a lot of research. I'm a naturally curious person. So before I decide to do anything, whether it's spending my money buying something or doing something or anything, I like to really know everything I can about something. So I'm naturally always researching. So before any trip, you know, I get a journal out, and for every trip I do a journal. And all of my research, the things that I read about or I see or I'm interested in, I'll start logging it in this journal. So that starts me from, that gets me from the dream stage of, well, maybe I want to go to Bali. You know, I have an itch to go to Bali. So I start, you know, with the research and reading, and, you know, I go to all the different sites that I use and look at the cost of the hotels. Because, you know, back to my genre, affordable luxury, I basically only stay in 4- and 5-star hotels. Now, I like to find hotels that are unique, that have, you know, an essence of the culture. I don't like just Ritz-Carlton's or, you know, standard brands that are kind of so systematized that they don't give you that real authentic experience. Nothing against Ritz-Carlton, because I've stayed in many of them, and some of them are just wonderful. But I try to find unique places. So, you know, I do all this research, and then when I decide that I really am interested, I put together a pre-trip budget. Now, most people don't really budget for trips. They just think, oh, well, I want to go on this trip, and it's probably going to cost me, oh, $5,000. So they get on the internet, and they book a hotel they think is good, and then they find a flight that works for them. It doesn't seem too expensive. And then they just go, okay, if they're doing this solo. Well, I go in, I have a budget worksheet that I work up for every trip. And what I do is I log in as many costs as I think that I will be spending, whether it's on food, entertainment, cabs, miscellaneous, pre-trip costs such as travel insurance, visas, either in gear that I need. And so I start out with an aggregate figure. Say I have $5,000 I want to spend, and I want to go somewhere. I have 10 days to go somewhere. So I look, and I end up booking the airfare and the hotel. And I usually always try to bundle this. This is something that I love to share. Bundle it. You know, go to Expedia and bundle your hotel and your airfare. If you're staying only in one place, great. You always save a considerable amount of money that way. But I'll get this, you know, this aggregate amount for the big ticket items, the hotel, the flight, and then I always do my transportation from the airport, because, you know, sometimes you arrive at the middle of the night, et cetera, and it's gotten pretty affordable. And many times the hotels will have a shuttle. But say the trip I've budgeted $5,000, those big costs are $2,000, so I have $3,000 left. And I'm going to be gone 10 days, so I have $300 a day that basically I can spend on food, on transportation, blow money shopping, which that's unfortunately my Achilles heel. I love to shop. I think that's one of the reasons why I had to start really budgeting, because I couldn't just go off in the wild blue yonder. But to bottom line it is, when you do this, at like every day, at the end of the day, just take your receipts real quickly, get your iPhone, use your calculator, see how much you've spent. If you've gone over $300 a day, and you can keep up with it during the day if you want to. I even have a daily budgeting sheet if you want to go that bean counter away. But if you've gone over, you have to pull back the next day or two to keep yourself within that $3,000, because when you go home and you haven't gone over this amount, you don't have a credit card shock, you know you can afford it, you have really had a successful trip. Because there's nothing worse than to have to go on a trip and you had a great time, you did everything you wanted to, and you didn't think about it, and you come home, and it takes you a year and a half to pay it off. It's very scary, but I know a lot of people that's happened to them. But if you start off with the concept of budgeting, and you do it, and you work it that way, it's kind of works magic. You really stay pretty close to what your total amount is. I know I took a round the world trip. When I launched my website, I wanted to show what the concept of affordable luxury travel really was. So what I did was I created a trip. I called it Around the World Solo in 50 Days. And I developed it around seven cities that I had never been to before. And they had seven different cultures. I set a budget of $32,500 for 50 days. So basically, you know, around $600 a day, which is, that's for everything. That is for business class airfare out of the United States. Now, in the United States, I use Southwest all the time and JetBlue because they're just, I just like both of those airlines. They've never done me wrong. And when they have delays and everything, they switch the tickets real nicely and give you extras. And I just like both of those airlines. But so what I did is I created a total budget of $32,500. I stayed a week in each place. Like I said, I traveled business class outside of the United States, stayed in wonderful five-star hotels, did so many fabulous things, you know, I could write a book about. And when I came home, I was over budget. I think it was $620, something like that. Now, that's pretty good for 50 days around the world. And what I wanted to show was, if you know, unfortunately, when you travel solo, if you take tours, most all tours, whether they're cruises or just tours, they have what's called a single supplement. And what you do more times than not is you pay fare and a half. It's a penalty because there's only one person in a room and, you know, just the whole cost of how tours are structured. And there are a lot of middlemen in all of this. Well, I wanted to show that you could go around the world for $32,500 versus if you did a National Geographic tour or if you did Abercrombie and Finch. Those tours start at around $85,000 to go around the world. And they're only for 25 days. So I wanted to show you could do it solo. When you get to your destination, you can take part in day tours, or you could hire private guides and drivers. And in third world countries, they're very inexpensive. And if you're staying at a nice hotel, the concierge will do it. And I've many times, I know what I want to do. And it, like when I was in Beijing, you know, is a big city like Washington, D.C. And because I don't read Chinese or speak Chinese, I was, you know, not willing to take mass transit. And I just did not have any kind of confidence level that I could get to the Summer Palace and I could do some of these things that were kind of spread out. So I went to my concierge and I said, well, I want to go to this big flea market that, you know, is every weekend, and I want to go to the Summer Palace. And so he said, no problem. I'll get you a private guide and driver. Well, that was just fabulous because it was very inexpensive. I negotiated the price. I told him I can only spend a certain amount. He made it work. So, you know, I didn't need to go on a big fancy tour and spend all this money with a big group of people and still not do everything I wanted to do. And then also be on their time schedule. You see what I'm saying? So it was a fabulous trip. And I'm still blogging about it, and I probably will be blogging about it for the next couple of years, just to keep focusing on that, you know, there are alternatives to doing solo travel that you can use that are more affordable and give you as much luxury or more.
Wow. So you've covered a lot of really great trips you've taken. Is there anything that throughout the years stands out as maybe your best moment?
Well, my best moment probably really occurred actually on that around the world trip. I had always wanted to go to Egypt, and one of my stops was Cairo, and then I did take part in a Uniworld river cruise down the Nile, but I felt like that was the best way to see the significant sites, the temples, the you know, Egyptian royal tombs, and a lot of the different aspects of ancient Egyptian culture. Because if I would have had a private guide and driver, you have to travel down the Nile, and I'd have to stay in all different types of hotels. And just logistically, I felt less safe doing that, because Egypt was probably the least safe place that I went. But I did not choose to go there before I went on the U.S. State Department. And I've written blogs about this, and I talk about this all the time. They have a wonderful travel website that gives you great information in terms of safety. They have women travel information, solo travelers, what to do, not to do. Of course, they have the travel warnings, and they have the travel advisories, which are all good to help make you decide whether you should go anywhere. And I always advise people when they're traveling solo, if they say don't go, don't go, because there's a reason why the State Department is warning you not to go. Well, they were not warning not to go to Egypt at that time. So my husband didn't really want me to go, but I really wanted to go. So I chose to do this through the Uniworld river cruise, and they are a fabulous riverboat company. I really think that they're the best. The lady who is behind the brand is such a, she's such a stickler for detail, and she loves beautiful interiors, and she just wants people who travel with her to really have out of this world times, and the company has really gotten better and better and better. Well, so I end up tagging, after I left Marrakesh, I tagged up with the Uniworld, and they met me at the airport. We stayed at the Four Seasons in Cairo, and that was a beautiful hotel. Well, the next day, our first stop was the Egyptian Museum. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the beauty of the art and the sophistication of the Egyptian culture. I mean, I've read a lot about it, and everybody, you know, who's has a good education is familiar with Egyptology and, you know, a lot of some of the mysteries that haven't really been solved or understood how sophisticated this culture was 3,000 years before Christ. But that museum, going there to see all this and all these different things that they used as symbols and how it all worked together with geometry and math. And I mean, it started to sink into me as, oh my God, this lost sophisticated culture. How did that happen? So that was the first introduction. And then we got on the boat and we started going down the Nile. Well, let me tell you something. That was just so special for me. And I'll never forget when we got to Karnak. There's this huge temple where it's right outside of Luxor, right in that area where the center of Egypt and many of their pharaohs ruled. But there are many articles about soul places or soul homes. And these are places where you go that you all of a sudden feel so comfortable, or you all of a sudden feel like you've come home. Just kind of like when you find your real mate that you marry. You just feel like you're home. Well, I walked into that temple, and I had the weirdest feeling I've ever had anywhere traveling. And so we were going through it, and then I just started bawling out crying for no reason. And I felt like that, you know, maybe it's something in some kind of far off memory, or I was picking up on something or whatever, because I'm pretty intuitive, that, you know, that if something was robbed here, or, you know, people, they had to leave here, that maybe even if, you know, past lives are real or whatever, and I don't say I believe in them, but maybe that I had some kind of connection here. I don't know, but I was overwhelmed, and I'm not a crybaby. I don't cry easy. So, and what was so funny too, you know, I mean, I just thought that it was really one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. The scale and size of the columns and the beautiful, you know, pharaoh statues and the obelisk and what all of that meant, using the sun's rays and the Holy of Holies and all these things that the Egyptology and this Egyptian culture practiced and believed in. I mean, they were on a very high wavelength. That's what I kept thinking. And so, you know, here I was trying not to show anybody I was crying. So then I kind of separated from the group, and we had to be back like in about half an hour. And our tour guide told us before we went into this beautiful complex, he said, now they're going to be hawkers of all these papyruses and these junk trinkets and everything, and just tell them no thank you, no thank you. So when I walk out of there and I walk into the bus, this young gentleman, he's probably about 20 years old, comes up to me and says, oh, papyrus, papyrus, you know, $1, $1. And I said, oh, no thank you, no thank you. And he kept on, and I said, no thank you, I'm really not interested, and they're beautiful or whatever. And I mean, he stopped dead in his tracks, and he said, look, I want to give them to you. And I said, no, you can't give me it. You can't give them to me. He said, no, I see a lot of people coming through here, and there is something about you that is different. And I said, oh, come on. He said, no, it's in your eyes. Trust me, it's in your eyes. And in Egypt, their eyes, and the Egyptians long ago were very big and oval, and I have kind of big eyes, but they were very luminous. And even in the museum in Cairo, they have these, a lot of the statues have these quartz eyes, these eyes that were made out of quartz or some type of semi-precious stone, but they were depicting the power and the luminosity in the Egyptians' eyes. And when you go to Egypt and you look at a lot of the people from Egypt, they have very luminous, fiery eyes when you look in their eyes. And so this young gentleman was saying something about my eyes, and he wanted to go. I said, look, no, I don't need this. He said, please come to me in my shop. I want to give you a couple of things. I said, no, I really don't want it. I was trying to really get him away. Well, he was so persistent. I went in his shop because, I don't know, I did. So he ended up giving me three papyruses and a couple of shrubs, which the shrubs are the beetles that they consider good luck. And he said, I want to give you this as a gift. And so, I mean, that was like, on top of me crying in the Karnak Cathedral for no reason, I'm getting these gifts.
That's crazy.
So I took it as a little confirmation that this was something that was a very special place for me for some reason, okay? And that I was to learn more about the sophistication of Egyptology, I think. And I hope to go back there within, you know, sometime within the next couple of years. But I got back on the tour bus, and the tour guide looked at me and said, you just gave in, didn't you? And I looked at him and said, no, he gave me. The kid gave it to me. He said, he what? I mean, he was so shocked. I said, yeah, he gave it to me. Look what else he gave me. And he just was dumbfounded. So that was just one little instance in Egypt, but every place I went, whether it was the two Tutankhamun, I can't ever say his name, his royal tomb, and the other different temples, and sailing down the Nile in the feluccas, and then going to the Nubian villages. Oh, I love the Nubian villages. They were so colorful, and the villagers were very creative, and we had a time where we got to visit one of the more prominent people in a Nubian village, and we had tea, and we got to see some of their crafts that they made. Of course, they wanted to sell you the crafts, but they were very beautiful, very simple, but very colorful and very beautiful. And then Abu Simbel, near the Aswan Dam, or you had to go way far south, almost to Sudan. Every place I went, Zach and Sarah, I was just completely, I just felt so energized. It's so, I loved it. I loved it all. The only thing I didn't like about Egypt, it made me very sad, was the poverty there. There's a lot of poverty. And tourism, unfortunately, is their only major industry. And now with a lot of the security and the terrorist threats, Egypt is a place people are staying away from, and it makes me very sad, because truly, if you like to sightsee, as pure sightseeing, and to see different architecture and cultures and etc. from old times, this is just, it's mind-boggling. It's like being on another planet, really. So Egypt, really, I have to say, is my all-time favorite. But everywhere I go, I have a great time wherever I go. I really do. Even places that seem kind of boring, there's something about me that always ends up where the action is. It's like a homing pigeon. I don't know what it is. And so then I blog about it or take pictures, you know, post them on social media. So all of my friends, they just think, oh boy, she's just taking flight. We don't know what happened after. She just left us. Oh, so that's my favorite place.
Awesome. So I've loved hearing how, you know, you travel so much with, you know, such an open mind and just, you know, being open to experiences and exploring. And I also love that you are so willing to utilize, you know, the services at the concierge or travel planners, things like that, that I think a lot of people are hesitant to use or kind of afraid of using because they think that in the long run it's going to cost them more money. But from listening to your stories, it sounds like it can really be a great service and a great thing to utilize. If you have one other piece of advice to offer travelers that could help them relax more or feel more comfortable and adventurous, what would that be?
Well, I think when you're traveling solo, and definitely as you get older, it's smarter to not do too many destinations in one trip. The more that I've traveled, I like to stay at least a week in a spot, because one of the you can't really absorb another place properly, first and foremost, if you don't stay a long enough time. Because I mentioned a little bit about the culture shock. You know, whether you're traveling to Venice or Paris for the first time, Madrid, Beijing, whatever, those first few days, if you've just flown there, you're going to be dealing with some jet lag. But it takes about 3 days to get used to your hotel room, the environment around the hotel, the way that people look, the sights, the smells, all that is bombarding your senses. And, you know, a lot of times when Americans travel to third world countries for the first time, they notice the dirt, they notice a lot of things that upset them. But after they stay there a while, they don't notice it because you get used to it. So if you're going to a new place and you only, you know, go for 3 days, you never really get through that culture shock. So you're not able to absorb everything that is wonderful that is around you because you're not there long enough. So to get a deeper feel for a culture and to experience everything and not be rushed around and just go to the sites, because that to me almost is, I almost don't like that kind of travel at all, even though I'm very curious and I like to see everything. But I like to stay enough time to where I can linger, I can stay up late, I can wake up late, and I still have enough days there to do everything that is important to me. So that's a big tip that I'll leave you with, is don't try to cram too many destinations or just go somewhere for a few days, unless it's just a long getaway and you know that you're just going to go and veg out, or you just want to go and just party for 3 days and you just want to party. But don't think you're going to really absorb the place like you should. And I love to get deep in the culture. You know, I use Hanoi as an example. It was my last stop on this around the world trip. And I thought that would be my least favorite city. And it would be a place where I'd go to the spa and just kind of rest up before the long flight home. I definitely wanted to go to the Hanoi Hilton. I wanted to get a little bit better understanding of the Vietnam War, because that's what was going on when I was in college. And I never really got it. I just thought, why are we over there? You know, this just does not make any sense to me. You know, the communist thing was all still, you know, we were supposed to be afraid of communism and all this stuff. But I just thought that, you know, and then we didn't win it. I mean, I just really didn't get it. How could the United States, this is how my mind thought, not win it? Well, I wanted to understand the whole experience more. So that was one of the reasons why I went. And then I had heard Vietnamese food there was so wonderful, and I love Vietnamese food. Well, I got to Hanoi, and I loved it so much because, first and foremost, it had such, the French influence was still so strong. You know, it was a part of the French, well, it was a French colony before World War I, and it reminded me of New Orleans so much. And I thought, you know, they had all of these homes where they had businesses, living quarters on top and courtyards in the middle. And that's what you have in the French Quarter in New Orleans. And I just was so comfortable walking down the street. Then the shopping was so inexpensive. I've never had this kind of shopping. I think I spent $110. I had 3 pairs of silk pants made, a silk jacket, and a silk dress. Beautiful. They made it in one day. Right there. Just exactly what I wanted. It was fabulous. Then I ended up taking a bike tour out to the villages around Hanoi, which was just delightful. A cyclo tour, a food tour. I went to a water puppet show. I walked all over Hanoi in the French section and the old section. The life of those people are so energetic. And they're just so full of energy and drive. I love places like that. That's one of the reasons why I like New York City so much. It has such an energetic vibe there. So, I mean, by the time I got ready to get into the limo to take me to the airport, I was like so exhausted. I didn't get any rest in Hanoi, but I got to stay there long enough then I did everything that I wanted to do. If I would have only gone there for 3 days, I would have missed half of the wonderful things, because I got to eat at night, sit on those little plastic chairs and those little squatty tables and eat that street food, which the street food in Vietnam, well, I haven't been to anywhere but Hanoi. I mean, it is really to die for. So if you can, when you travel, allow yourself enough time to really absorb the culture, to number one, get through the culture shock, enough time to see the sights, but enough time also to get into the rhythm of the life of the place. And you'll come back with so many new insights, and you know, your enrichment level will be a lot deeper, and that transfers into all sections of your life. You get more confidence. I think when you travel more, you end up being a nicer person. you definitely are more understanding of different people. Live and let live. And but you can't just go there and just check it off the list. I think that you should try to give yourself enough time to really absorb the culture. So that's my last tip.
All right. So I think we've kept you longer than we even said we would. This has been a great conversation. Thanks again so much for talking to us. So tell us one more time about AstridTravel.com and the other projects you have going on.
Okay. Well, my website is called Astrid Solo Travel Advisor. And the URL is very simple, astridtravel.com. So, you know, obviously I'm on the internet. So if you go to the website, you'll see all the different sections in it. But I have a very good destination section, which has a map that's integrated with all the places that I've been and all the places that I've been that I've written blogs about. Now, I will be blogging when I'm in heaven. I've been to so many places. But what I have on this map is if you click on the little pin, and I don't have a blog or several blogs about the destination, you are hooked up with a site called Momondo. And I love Momondo because it gives you lots of information on the culture of a place, you know, cost. It helps you with budgeting, definitely gives you recommended eating venues, pricey, moderate, and low. It's a really good site because it's very hip and it's very modern, and it's a very good start, basic a research tool to help you decide whether you've taken this idea, this dream, you want to go somewhere, to start getting serious and starting putting pen to the paper. Like I said, do the budget. It'll be a good skill to learn. But so that's one section. Then I have all the blogs, and I have a search button that you can type in, you know, restaurants in Hanoi or food and wine in Hanoi. It'll take you to the blog post that I've done. I also have two bloggers. One of the bloggers has been tasked to focus mostly on New Orleans because, you know, I'm from Louisiana, and truly, New Orleans is a fabulous city. And since Katrina, when everything was really refurbished and redeveloped, it is just better than it's ever been in terms of food, architecture, festivals, you know, things to do, walkability. It's just a beautiful city. And so I've tasked this blogger, and she's just dynamic. I love her. She's young, and she's just blogging about everything that anybody would want to know about New Orleans, do, where to shop, everything, because I want to show that I think New Orleans is a great destination for the solo travel. So we have the blog. Then I do videos. I do a lot of videos about what to wear, where, and when. I get so many questions about what to pack, how to pack. This is a big stressor for women. You'd think that that wouldn't be any big deal. Well, let me tell you, I get so many questions about it. So I love clothes, and I've always kind of been good at putting together what I want to wear wherever I'm going. So I do a lot of showing about how to do it and be minimalistic, or what you need to not bring and why. And especially, you know, since I am older, I mean, I really try to be very universal, because the people that are interested in what I'm doing, they're the young professionals, they're the middle-aged married people who just want me time and want to get away from their responsibilities of family and pressures, but then come back home. And then my age group, where they're either divorced or widowed, or like me, married, my husband doesn't want to go anywhere anymore, and I still want to go. So I do a lot of videos to show you, you know, or to show how I do it. And then my podcast, which is Solo Travel Talk, and I air that every Thursday, and it's on all the major podcast channels. So all you have to do is type in Solo Travel or Solo Travel Talk, and it will come up. And my marketplace, I hope to launch within 6 weeks, and it will be offering products that I am developing, as well as products that I have used that I feel like are essential for travel, and specifically solo travel. Excuse me. And then also I have a whole list of recommended vendors that I like that, you know, I use. So if you are thinking about buying clothes to go on a hike, you know, Land's End or whatever. So you'll see that on my site. And then last, my trip section, which is, you know, I'm going to build that slowly. And the focus will be, I want to put together a group of, say, about 20 trip designers from all over the world that people can come to my site. I have a section called Ask Astrid, and all you have to do is ask me, you know, would you please help me find a trip designer for, you know, say, Bali or whatever. But my concept is to have these trip designers and people who want to go on what I call bespoke trips. Like I talked about the Russia trip. I knew what I wanted to do. So I wanted somebody to create the whole trip for me the way I wanted it, you know, taking in consideration of my budget and the safety factors, etc., and just do it all for me, okay? So I want to provide that with the trip designers, as well as create these specialty tours for small groups that I offer on a yearly basis or every other year. So that trip section is really the section in the least developmental stage, but I'm going to get there on it. You know, I'm a very, I like to make things happen, so I'm going to make that happen too, but that's a little slower. But I do have a trip coming up to San Miguel next year that I'm in the developmental stage, but it'll focus on the Mayan culture and the wonderful city of San Miguel Allende in Mexico. It's a very upscale, artsy community with wonderful food, lots of people who make jewelry and crafts. So I'm real excited about creating that trip. So those are all the things you can find on my website, AstridTravel.com. And then, of course, you know, I have to be on social media, so you can watch all my photos on Instagram, Astrid.Travel, and I'm on Twitter, AstridTravel, as well as Facebook. It's Astrid Travel, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, and it comes up as Astrid Travel. So just remember Astrid Travel. You put in Astrid Travel, it'll things will pop up on the internet, or you know, on Instagram or whatever. So yeah, that's how you can find me.
Okay. And then we'll be sure to mention all that again in the outro, and then you'll be able to check our show notes page for all the links to that too. So
okay.
But again, thank you so much for joining us, and I guess that's it for today, but it's been a great conversation.
Well, Sarah and Zach, I wish you all the best. I listened to one of your podcasts before we did this show. You're very authentic. You're very authentic. And I think both of you are special in what you're doing. I know that you are speaking to people that need to hear from your type of viewpoint and your essence. And, I think you have been blessed to do this and have been led to do this. And I wish you all the success in the world.
All right. So I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Astrid from AstridTravel.com. Like she mentioned, all of her online presence, please go and follow her on Twitter and on Facebook. All of her usernames there are Astrid Travel. Looks like she got lucky when we got stuck with things like Listen TL.
I like it, though.
Yeah, I like it all right. I would rather have Thinking Liberty, but I was a little late to the game for any of that. So while you're at it, go like Astrid Travel on all the social media platforms and go to her website, astridtravel.com, and check us out, too. This show notes page will be thinkingliberty.com/19 for any resources and, you know, links and whatnot we have on there. And our social, which I was just saying, is at ListenTL on Twitter and /ListenTL on Facebook. So please give us a like and a follow on there as well.
Yeah, and I hope that you enjoyed the episode and that you let us know that you enjoyed it and send us some feedback on it or give us a like, comment, review. Additionally, if you have any questions for Astrid or if you were prompted to have more questions about solo travel that maybe we didn't cover on the episode because we went pretty broad in general and a lot of things just to be able to cover more material, let us know and maybe we'll have Astrid back on in a future episode, or maybe we'll do the research for you and get those questions answered.
Alright, well that's it for this time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.